Hello and welcome to the Open Goal podcast, keeping the ball on the ground in association with our friends from William Hill. And this week, we've really pulled out all the stops. Well, at least we tried to, but we've ended up with Simon Ferry and Chris Collins. But listen, it's great to have guys on board. Simon, the Open Goal legends, with us again. This time, many Peterhead outfits have you got? What is it we've got here?
Peterhead play the most football in anyone in Britain, mate. This is my 50th game of the season. Every Tuesday I've got a game,
And beside him we've got Chris Commons from Sky Sports, Daily Mail columnist, not a bad six-a-side player, former Scotland international, Celtic legend,
dreadful
of the
last
year,
week. Yeah.
The full bit. Chris, good to have you with us.
Thank you very much. I'm excellent, thank you.
Excellent. Right, we'll crack on. We've got a few great topics for the listeners this week. We're going to talk about Scott Brown's international retirement. We're going to talk about Gary Neville's commentary from the Carabao Cup final between Arsenal and Man City at the weekend, when it was pretty scathing on the Arsenal players. We're going to talk about Cup finals themselves and get the boys' memories. And finally, we've got a nice wee one to finish off with. Going to talk about initiations and what new signings have to go through when they join a club and the stuff that the new teammates put them through. But first of all, we'll get to one of the hot topics of the moment, and that is the Celtic and Scotland captain Scott Brown standing down from international football after 55 caps in a 10-year period. Chris, can you understand why Scott has decided to call it a day?
Yeah, definitely. I think he's done all he can. He's at an age now where he can perhaps try and prolong his club career. And realistically, even if Scotland got to the next major championships, I don't think Scott would be considered to play in it anyway. You know, I think what he's done for the country over the last 10 years is pretty remarkable, for the injuries that he's sustained as well over that time. So yeah, he can bow out with his head held high. I think the last saloon was obviously the Gordon Strachan era, and I think going forward now, I think with the new manager, obviously new chief exec that's going to be in there, that it's time for a new captain change, and obviously it's going to freshen things up, not just behind the scenes but certainly on the pitch as well.
Two things then to ask you on top of that. How much of a blow will that be to Alec McLeish?
I think at this minute in time, Scott Brown's probably irreplaceable in the centre midfield. There's not too many candidates that stand out for me that it will do the job that Scott Brown does. So, you know, he's got a lot of players to choose from, but not the sort of players that you think will replace Scott Brown. There's no standout candidates. And obviously with Darren Fletcher, obviously coming to his latter stages of his football career as well, you know, it's really leaving a big space there to fill. So, it's, for me, a difficult one for Alex McLeish, but something that no doubt once he took the job, he'd half expect it anyway.
And B, you said, you know, A, he's irreplaceable as captain, but irreplaceable in the midfield. Who do you see as a successor to him as an ex-Scotland captain?
I think you've got to look at someone that's going to play pretty much every single game. For me, that would be Kieran Tierney. I know he's young, he's captained the national team before. He's relatively inexperienced as a captain, but I think as a role model, how he plays the game, for me, would be a ideal fit. But I think when you are a national manager, a national captain, you need to have the backing of the whole dressing room and the nation. I think KT will certainly get that.
You've known Kieran as a kid, mm-hmm. coming through. If he was handed the captaincy, or if Alec McLeish asked him about it, you think Kieran would be phased in any way by taking on that responsibility?
Difficult one. It's a huge responsibility, and again, he's not had a great deal of experience at club level as a captain. You know, he's certainly got all the attributes there to be a captain. You know, he plays every minute, he plays the game properly. He's a great, great player. But to be a captain, you need to probably, what I always felt when I was a captain, was to take a bit of your game away, to be that kind of role model, that you are organising, that you are the person that people will go to. There's a lot of responsibility that comes with being a captain, not just on the park but off the park as well. And you know, it's a bit of a ruthless business when you are a captain. If it's not going quite so well, you know, all eyes and fingers will be pointed at the captain, that he's not motivating, he's not organising. And obviously with Kieran being such a young player, you know, that would be a big responsibility, but something that I think if you got offered the opportunity to do it, you'd snap it with both hands.
For both you guys, you've both known Bruni. You've known him, Simon, from when he first came into to Celtic when Gordon Strachan signed him, you know, and Chris Latterly in his time when he was a captain and matured into this leader and top pro. Simon, what's your early memories of Scott Brown when he came to Celtic?
Just thinking that he ended my Celtic now. When he came in, I was kind of pushing to get in the first team, and when Booney came in, I watched him train the first couple of days. I said, may as well pack my bags and get ready to go somewhere else, because he was a freak. He's so fit, so strong. I remember first couple of days he trained, I tried to kick him and it hurt me more than it hurt him. He is actually made of metal. And just his ability to get up for every game, I've never seen anything like it. Even when I was at Dundee, just playing against him, I mean, I think they were beating us 4-0. Probably shouldn't say this, but I was trying to get a laugh on him when we were 4-0 done. And he looked at us like I just farted in his face. Just was not interested in any sort of banter while the game was going on. And then after I was at him, trying to get a laugh in that, and he's like, oh, I can't even remember it. Just totally focused. I think he's playing the best football of his career just now as well, so it's a massive loss. But just on the captain, I think it's easier to be captain in international. I mean, with all my international experience, it's just meetings, isn't it? All you need to do is, what, you're going away 3 weeks of the year, and it's a meeting every day you need to organise. Whereas a club captain's, it's an everyday thing, isn't it? I think it'd be good for Tierney to start being the Scotland captain, other than getting flung straight into being the Celtic captain. I think it's a good grounding for him.
In terms of your memories of Scott, you know, when he was starting to really hit the heights.
I don't think I can say anything other than what Simon just said. Yeah, he's a freak. Yeah. Quite strange, isn't it? But he is physically and mentally one of the funniest guys off the park. You know, he's probably the first one to take the mickey out of him himself. Would do anything for you. A real character. But you see, as soon as he puts that strip on and gets in the tunnel, you just see this glare come over his eyes, and it's like he's in the zone. And I think if you're down in the trenches or in a game where you need people to dig you out of a hole, then Scott Brown's are certainly one that he'd be there first. And obviously with his desire to win, his mentality, and he's blossomed into a real, real, not only top player, but a real leader and a captain. That's why I think he will be such a big loss.
One bad thing about him is his gear is horrific. Horrific.
He goes out of his way to actually buy stuff that's gear. So bad.
I remember when he first came.
He's a shot and faith.
But he's got used to here. I don't know if he's still with Puma.
No.
See, when he was with Puma, all the first team boys used to come in with Gucci gear, and then he'd walk in with the baggiest Puma jeans. I think you get them. And a Puma sports t-shirt, man. I'd be like, who is this character? Pure bouncing in, no caring at all, man.
No.
Did not care less, but his clobber was terrible.
Tell us when you see him, because a lot of people talk about it now, and actually they say that maybe Kieran Tierney's similar, perhaps role models himself, or Scott's a role model for him. What do you think training every day at Lennox Town? Because everybody knows how freezing cold Lennox Town can be. And then you see him in St. Petersburg last week.
T-shirt, shorts.
What do you think of that mentality when you're watching that guy every day?
You know what? He trains every single day with a T-shirt on. T-shirt, shorts, every single day. He's never been any different. On the walks, it's just a T-shirt. And you know what? He's never, ever been ill. Never had a cold, never had a snuffle. So, to put that back into the first thing, yeah, he's a freak.
Crazy. I couldn't believe when I seen him in Russia, minus 16, my T-shirt on.
What makes him, just to get me, because you say that he's got a great blend, obviously he's got ability, he's a leader, but he's also got a sense of humour off the park. He can mix it up. So what gives him that kind of personality? Gives a wee insight into him, you know, day to day, where he manages to blend it all together?
I think he's a bit mad, isn't he, Scott Brown? There's something not right in his head, but he loves a laugh, doesn't he? He loves being stupid. See, when he used to come and he'd fall over the ball and everyone would start laughing, or he'd kick the ball at the pitch and anyone else, wee Strachan, would go mad at them. Like, but they would just laugh because it was Brownie. It just seemed that he had this likeable thing about him that no matter what he'd done, coaches and players would laugh about it and forgive him because it was Brownie, because you ultimately know if he's on your team, he's going to give absolutely everything he can for you. So I think he gets away with a lot more than other players did, especially with wee Strachan. But you can see why, because plays every game, never misses a game. He's a manager 3 minutes, really.
Yeah, Chris, I don't know if you remember. I remember when Neil Lennon took over as manager the summer of 2010. Celtic, Scott Brown didn't have the greatest starts. You know, his discipline on the park. Celtic had bad results in Europe, and there was question marks over Scott Brown's suitability to be a leader for Celtic and to continue as captain. When you first came in, did you notice an improvement in him and kind of 12 months under Neil, or what kind of player was he when he first arrived to the player that he was when you left Celtic 20 months ago?
When I came in, I thought he was just, yeah, a very, very fit, talented midfielder. And I think the onus of him being captain of Celtic put extra pressure on him to be this kind of Neil Lennon type, you know, front and centre, taking everyone on at the front of every battle. And that got him in trouble a few times, you know, a few red cards, a few costly red cards, and, you know, ultimately a learning curve for Scott. But, you know, you don't just become the Celtic captain overnight and, you know, it's a natural. I think you've got to blend into the role, and you need to learn from your bad experience. It's all right being a captain, lifting all the trophies and stuff, but, you know, again, I think a captain's role is not just walking the team out and picking up the trophies. It's off the field, it's your go-to man, it's the one that picks you up, it's the one that ultimately has the final say. He's the in-between guy between you and the manager, and yeah, it's a big responsibility to be captain, and ultimately you have to sort out the nights out, which Scott is extremely good at.
Tell me, finally, before we move on to the Gary Neville section, best captain you've played under during your career, and why?
Best captain, yeah, Scott Brown. Got to be Scott Brown. Yeah, that's when I won, obviously, all my trophies. And like I said, when you're down in the trenches, when you're not playing to the best of your ability, you can always look to Scott, and he'd find something extra. He'd inspire me, he'd inspire the rest of the group of players. But just generally a nice, nice guy. Couldn't have wished for a better captain in terms of what he offered on and off the park.
And for you, Simon?
Kevin Thompson was a good captain at Dundee. He was a good go-to between you and the manager. I think he probably went to the manager more for me than anyone else did. I enjoyed Tom. I think him and Bruni came through together. Best pals, quite similar personalities. You can talk to them about pretty much anything. But we had a wee striker at Portsmouth, David Conley. Uh-huh. Remember him? Played for Ireland. He was a brilliant guy. He was our captain there.
What made him so good?
He was like Roy Keane, man. He just did not care. He would just say what he thought. And I loved it. Another guy, Jonathan Douglas at Swindon, was the same, played for Ireland as well, similar to Roy Keane. They sort of characters, I love them. Just said what they think, and even if they disagreed with the manager, they would speak up, and I really liked that. I didn't like captains that just go along with the manager all the time.
Since you brought that up, have you been keeping up to date with the Chris Brunt stuff?
No.
At West Brom just now, he's been outspoken in terms of the way West Brom are growing. The taxi incident in Spain, losing to Huddersfield, he's questioned the desire of the players, he's questioned the manager's tactics, there's been a bit of a backlash. But do you think when you look at West Brom in a time of need, does it maybe take somebody to come out?
I like
and
it,
like,
I think definitely.
Not a can of worms, if you like.
If something like that doesn't get said, it's just going to keep going on and on. We're going to keep getting beat every week. Sometimes it takes something like that to change your fortune, so fair play to him having the balls to come out and do that, I think, definitely.
I think, yeah, within the four buildings of the dressing room, then certainly say what you want.
But suppose he's gone public, which hasn't been doing well.
Yeah, I think if you're coming out as a player and questioning the manager's tactics publicly, you know, that's not an ideal situation, because you know you're going to get called in by the manager. But you know, he's been there and done it as a top quality player, so you know, he's being open, speaking his mind.
Well, talking about speaking your mind, that takes us nicely on to the next section. Gary Neville, co-com with Martin Tyler on Sky Sports, Chris, on Sunday afternoon, the Carabao League Cup final, Manchester City against Arsenal, and he absolutely leathered the Arsenal players. Chris, as a pundit now yourself, what did you make of Gary Neville's comments?
Well, firstly, I didn't hear it. I've had to have a look what he has had to say. I was travelling back from Aberdeen, so listening to it on the radio, but obviously didn't get Gary Neville's comments. But what he has said is ultimately probably what every single person was thinking. Now, all the reports that I've seen and the stats from the game, Arsenal clearly weren't at the races. Now, I think there's a fine line at being a pundit, and me trying to still learn, obviously, when I'm doing it, is that you have to be honest. You know, you're not getting paid to sit on the fence. You have to be honest. You have to give what they call as your expert opinion. But ultimately, if you're having a scathing attack on some players or individuals, I think as a pundit you're in a very, very difficult situation, that if you go after someone personally, you know, next week you might then have to be interviewing them. I always think if I'm going to give my opinion about a certain individual, that then I can walk down the same corridor as them and still get the respect. I don't think you have to be, you've got to be critical, but you can't be personal.
Yeah.
And I think if you live by that, then that's great. But listen, I think what Gary Neville said is pretty much what every single person's saying. And sometimes the truth and honesty is probably the best way to say it. But ultimately, it will upset a few people.
But as you know, as you say there, the key to all being a pundit, if you have been critical, mm-hmm. a team, a manager, an individual player is, If you, as you say, you bump into the next day,
yep.
you can look them in the eye, and if they challenge you,
yep.
you can back up what you're saying. Ultimately, they might not agree with you, but as long as you're able to,
you've got to have facts.
Stand your corner.
You've got to have facts. You've got to have. You can't just say something for the sake of it.
Yep.
You know, you can't say, you know, you singled out Ramsey and Wilshere, I believe, about them walking and is it Xhaka as well?
Xhaka,
just strolling about a field. But listen, he's not to know that Arsene Wenger said, sit there. I don't want, you know.
But I don't want you to press.
Yeah, I don't want you to press. I want you to just, you know, just hold your ground. But I think what Gary Neville's seen is an Arsenal team that is on a serious decline. And he's probably looking at the team that he played against. Yeah. You know, the likes of Petit, you know, Merson, you've got Vieira.
Bergkamp.
Like players, you're thinking, yeah. you know, they were where he thought, I'm in a game here. None of them are going to be running around. It was a feisty affair. And you can imagine what sort of dressing room mentality went on at Manchester United when you've got the likes of Roy Keane in the middle of midfield that let's get fired into these, and then he's looking at an Arsenal team that look easy to beat. I think he said spineless, just not playing for the manager. And obviously I think being a pundit, he's been paid to give his expert opinion, and I think he's probably right on this occasion, but he's the leading light in punditry, isn't he?
Yeah.
So
he's a
man, yeah.
In terms of Simon, as a not as a pundit, but as a viewer, whether it's Sunday afternoon or other times you're watching live television and you hear co-coms guys giving that kind of point, what do you think as a viewer? Do you enjoy that kind of thing?
I loved it. Loved it. Thought he was bang on as well. Like Chris said, honestly, that you didn't know what Wenger's tactics are, but just for their whole body language. I mean, it's so frustrating when you see that young kid crying at the game, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's probably travelled miles to go, maybe travelled, people travel countries to go and watch that game, and you see these guys on big money and walking about 2-0, 3-0 doing it. It frustrates you as a fan, do you know what I mean? And Gary Neville's seen it the same way we are, which is brilliant, I think. With the position he's in, you think, oh, he might maybe defend the players and stick up for them, but he sees it as a fan like us, and just raw emotion it was from him. It wasn't even his team, which really impressed me. But did you see Roy Keane with Jack Wilshere as well?
Mm.
Most overrated player on the planet.
Mm.
I mean, I think that's a bit harsh, isn't it? But see, if you're in your play, do you, if a pundit slaughters you, do you get offended?
You know, I were luckily enough never to either come in direct contact with a pundit that had been critical over anything that I did.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I could remember in my Celtic days was Chris Sutton was always very, very critical of Ronnie Dyler, of not playing me,
mm-hmm.
or not playing me in my position. So in that sense, Chris Sutton did me a favour that he were behind me, really, rather than the manager. Because
you telling Chris to say it?
No, not at all. You know what? I've only ever met Chris Sutton once at a dinner event. But yeah, I can imagine it.
Times are up here, as I said, you think about, you know, double
yeah.
the successful team. You had a good float, and you were making a serious contribution as to what was
yeah.
happening on it. So you wouldn't have had many negative.
No.
But if anything, when Ronnie Dyler was leaving you out of the team, you were actually getting a lot of support from supporters and media, weren't you?
Yeah.
To get you in the team.
Yeah. And obviously, there's nothing that you can do about that. That's not going to change anything. But I think as a pundit now, it's a very, very difficult position for me to be in. Obviously, knowing all the coaching staff, all the players here. And that's what I mean about being overcritical. You know, you could, you know, if Scott Sinclair misses a relatively easy chance, I could say something along the lines of, you know, with his ability, he should be scoring that. I expect him to score that. Whereas someone else who don't know him might just say, that's disgraceful miss, a player of his quality. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so you see it.
Exactly, yeah. So I just think it don't matter where you come from, you've got to be, show some respect to your fellow professionals, because it weren't so long ago that I was missing tap-ins. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the reality is football is a very difficult game, and if you all played well every single week, then...
So tell me this, you've been a pundit now for 9 months, you've got your column in the Daily Mail, Sky
yep.
Sports every weekend. How many phone calls you had? Have you had one or two calls, like, asking you to explain yourself?
I chat with Derek McInnes. But he was brilliant. But it is, it's a, like I said, it's a learning curve. Not once trying to stitch anyone up, not trying to question their ability or preparations. It's, like I say, I'd say it how I see it, and hopefully that playing at the level that I have played at, I will give an insight to the people that's probably not seeing the sort of things that I'm seeing. So, yeah, you know, it's, you've got to try and give your opinion and teach people something new that they've not seen.
Exactly, I think for a, when you watch television, and I love watching Graham Souness. I think Graham Souness is the best in it. And I know Graham doesn't do cold comms. He sits in the studio and analyse pre-match, half-time and post-match. But I always think that, as Chris says there, that when you're a pundit or a co-commentator, you've got to educate the viewer or educate the listener if you're on radio, because there's no point saying, if you don't hit the target, you don't score a goal. It's 11 v. All the cliches, anybody could go on and say that, but if you've been a player and you've been in a dressing room tactically, etc., etc., it's about education. And I think the level of punditry now, if you're a geek, I think it's brilliant. You know, I think it's really,
you're getting players really coming straight out of football. Yeah. You know, Jamie Carragher, Gary Neville, you know, Jamie Redknapp, he came straight out of football into punditry. And I don't know if you find it, but if you've been doing that sort of thing, that in football you get learnt pretty much the cliches, don't you? So how's it going this week? I'm just working hard. I'm just going to be manager's thoughts. I'm just happy to be thing. I'm just happy not to be.
Fans
would do you know what I mean? It's just like, right, okay. And then you go on to the other side. It's like, right, what did you think? You can say, this, the barrier's down. Right, actually, I can say what I think. But you aren't fearful of what you're going to say, because sometimes brutally honest opinions can get you in a lot of trouble.
You used to do the ratings, Mark, didn't you? Do you ever get players? I think you gave me a 3 once at Dundee, and I phoned you and thanked you. It's the best mark I got of a season. No, but did you ever get players phoning you?
The ratings are the things you could write 1,000 words about somebody, but it just came down to, because it's very quick and easy just to go to the bum bum bum.
Save 6.
That's it. And listen, I always, rightly or wrongly, and it's a human nature thing, I was doing the job. If there was a guy that you were giving a rating to and you thought he's been okay, but you could go a 5, 6, or 7, it's one of those kind of games. What do you do with him? And also, he was a good guy, for example, see if he stops and talks to you in the mix zone, or his courteous or manner, you say, I'll give him a 7 because he's a good guy. Human nature. See if he's one of the guys that walked bashy and kidded on, he was in the mobile phone or the big
beat
headphones set on, you'd be like, ah, he's a 5. And that's
so what's the worst rating you've got that?
I really can't remember. I don't think I've ever given a 10. No. I don't think I've ever got a 10. There's been a few 9s, but I can't remember. But I do remember one time being in a disagreement with John Hartson. John played for Celtic many, many years ago. And I can't remember, we clashed over something. But anyway, I said to John, I says, John was having his say. And I said, well, I says, I think we better stop you. I said, because if you don't big him, then I guarantee you maximum 5 out of 10 for the next half dozen games. I says, no, I'll give Sutton and Larson 7 or 8. So if I sit and we're fine now, John's for you. But it's funny how if you do have my old job, then it kind of tend to happen. If somebody phoned you and wanted to have a go at you or take you to task over something, you can hopefully you cleared there 9 times out of 10, you cleared there, and then you actually went on to enjoy a good relationship. That happened a lot of the time. Very rarely did somebody phone you to have a go and the relationship deteriorated from there. It would always actually improve. So it was a good thing. I'm saying it's a good thing if you're a player or a manager, you've got a problem, phone up and then find out that guy's point of view. He'll get your point of view. You meet in the middle and you move on, rather than stoking it up and speak behind people's backs or whatever. You always front it up. I think it's the best way. But we're in the middle of a really good podcast here for Open Goal, keeping the ball on the ground with William Hill and Mark Guidi. Delighted to say joined by Simon Ferry and Chris Commons this afternoon. We've just finished talking about Gary Neville's commentary and punditry. We'll stick on the theme of cup finals. It was a Carabao Cup final down south on Sunday. Chris, you've played in a few cup finals in your time. One or two stick out for you?
You know what? The first one that sticks out of my head, it's not even winning. It was getting beat by Rangers in extra time. Jelovic scored. You know, that was a feeling that I'd still to this day like rages me, because first of all we got beat, secondly I was garbage, and it's just all the I think about all the fans and, you know, all my family that travelled up, and it's just let everyone down. And that's one of the biggest feelings that I get, you know, above all the winnings. You sometimes remember that loss that probably you designed Spurs, you want to win more silverware. But yeah, that's one that really will stick out in my mind.
A happy one?
Yeah, there's been a few. I'd have to say winning the League Cup for the first time. Memorable. Putting the cup on my head and doing a little dance around the back of the goal. Yeah, but I think it was one trophy that I'd not won, so that was quite memorable. But, you know, I think certainly semi-finals and finals, you always remember the goals that you score. But ultimately, yeah, you'll always remember the ones that go away.
Did you... refresh my memory, did you play actually for Ronnie Dyla in the Scottish Cup semi-final when Rangers won in penalty kicks? Were you involved in that one?
On the bench, didn't get on.
On the bench, didn't go on. Penalty kick taker, you didn't go on.
No, but you know what? I was carrying a nasty little flu virus in that week as well. So, you know, I wasn't 100%, but yeah, that was one game that, as a player, I was desperate to get on to try and change our fortunes. But I think Rangers played particularly well on that day. And at the time, we just looked like it was one game too many. A lot of players that just looked a yard off it and, yeah, got away from us.
Simon, cup memories?
I think I've told you before, we played the League One playoff final my first year at Swindon. I was on loan. I think we beat Charlton over two legs. And then we played Millwall in the final. And both games in Millwall that year had been big fights between us and Millwall. And I was as far away from it as you can imagine. Anyway, standing in the tunnel, and it's their manager now, Neil Harris. He used to get called Chopper Pops. Harris. So I would play a sitter for us, and he would be in the hole for Millwall, so I always need to play up against him. Standing in the tunnel at Wembley. First game, only game actually, I was shitting myself. Fucking nervous standing in the tunnel. Neil Harris just looks at us, I remember it, he looked at us and he went, "Come on, lads, look at these lot, they're shitting themselves." And I was thinking to myself, how does he know? Went out. He was on me the full 90 minutes, man. Look at him. Look. Look how nervous he is. Oh, I had an absolute beast. They beat us 1-0. Charlie Austin went through one-on-one. Ball bobbled up and he smashed it miles over the bar. Well, about a minute to go. And that was a terrible, terrible experience. As I say, all my family came down from Scotland. My dad was like, "What was wrong with you, man?" And I was like, but it was Chopper. I got in my head massively. And then after it, got drug tested, sitting in the Wembley dressing room for 2 hours, couldn't do a toilet. Still thinking, I was waiting on Chopper to come through and tell us it was alright to do a toilet. So that was a terror. And then we got to the JPT final as well at Wembley. Johnson's Paint, you probably never heard it. We played Chesterfield, beat again 2-0. But the semi-final was in December, and it was freezing, and DeCanio wore a jacket, hat and scarf, I think I've told you before, and because it was December, it was freezing, he had it, and he was so superstitious. So the final was like 4 months later, middle of May or whatever. 90 degrees at Wembley, man. This madman standing with a full hat, jacket, scarf. I thought he was having a stroke at the side of the pitch, mate. He was absolutely sweating, man. Every time, even at half time, he wouldn't take it off, sweating. No good memories.
When you talk, when you're talking about managers in semi finals and finals, has there ever been a. Have you noticed managers' team talks preparation different in terms of more intensity, more detail for finals, because you know you've got 90 minutes, it's make or break? And also, has there been a particularly inspirational team talk from a manager, even maybe one at half time when things aren't going your way and it's changed the course of a game in a final?
Mine's went the opposite way. That League One playoff final that year, we had a great dressing room. It was a laugh. Nothing was serious. Danny Wilson was a great manager. He played under Clough, so he was all for having a laugh all the time. Remember, I got a tattoo on my bum and he found it. So he made us doing it training. He's like, "Get on the goal line, bend over, pull the shorts down." And every single one, coaching staff, everyone out the kitchens, kicking boys at me with my thing out. So it was a great laugh that year. And then we got to the final, and the day of the final, he's like, everyone in the meeting room. And he brought in this psychologist for a serious chat, and the boys just were like, deflated, man. Remember walking out, and the boys were like that, walking out the bus, like, "What the f*** was that? That's no us at all." And it absolutely threw the boys. I'm not making an excuse, that's why it was, but it was just weird that he chose to do that the day of the final, after the full year had been, we'd got by on good team spirit and having a laugh, and it was so serious and kind of threw the boys off a bit.
Inspirational ones.
Inspirational, I don't know. See, working with Neil Lennon, he was always inspirational. That's when he came into his element in the dressing room, speaking. I always knew what to say. Was very honest in his
appraisals.
Yeah, approach, yeah. But I remember one at Motherwell, we were playing crap. And he'd go around individually, and he pointed to Big Fraser. He says, "I don't know where that your head's at." He says, "Thinking about these other clubs that are watching you." He says, "I won't take you tomorrow. Next one, Gary Hooper. Fucking you're the same, I know. You get your head up." And he looked at me, he went, "You, nothing." You've offered nothing. So, yeah. But the, again, it's more memories that you, like comedy value, because we'd come away from that either winning or drawing the game. And Big Charlie Mulgrew would just do the best impressions of the gaffer. And then Parks got wind of that Charlie could do an impression, so then the gaffer had this kangaroo court and got Charlie to do the impression of the manager, which he ultimately did and got fined for it. But it was just a good laugh, and yeah, good times that you could interact with a manager and a coach, and yeah, a good dressing room back then.
Just where we're on, Neil, just to touch on, you obviously covered the game, Kilmarnock v Hibs, problems with referee, but overall, in a bigger picture, you look at two really good managers there, Steve Clark at Kilmarnock and Neil Lennon.
Yep.
I take it you're not surprised in the slightest the way that Neil's got a grip of Hibs and promotion the first season.
Yep.
And looking like, you know, looking good, decent for a top four finish as well this season.
I think firstly, yeah, Hibs are in a very good place, not just on the park but off the park. I think what Leanne Dempster has done there is phenomenal. I think the season tickets are highest they've been for a long, long time. I think when I used to play against Hibs, it was always our full. Yeah. Wasn't a great deal of travelling support, but now you're looking at a team that a regular 15,000-16,000 people coming through the door. That's brilliant for any player coming there, that you can see that sort of atmosphere. And they've got good players. I think Dylan McGeoch's coming into his own. It's probably the first time he's played consecutive games all his career. You know, Dylan was always one that would play one or two games, be really good, and then he'd be injured for three or four and then back again. So he's playing really good. John McGinn's obviously hitting some really good heights, performances-wise, scoring some important goals. But the defence is solid. You know, I don't think they're the sort of team that you want playing too much, you know, Brazil-type football. But what they are is very, very good defensively. That gives them a platform to go and score goals. And I think what they have been missing is an out-and-out goal scorer, number nine. I think with the boy coming in, is it Cambrary? He looks like a handful. See him at Kilmarnock, played very well first 45 minutes, but had a complete collapse in the second half, which is very much unlike them.
Okay, good stuff. Thank you very much. On to our final part of the Open Goal podcast, keeping the ball on the ground. We're here with Chris Commons and Simon Ferry. We're into the last 7 minutes of the show. We're getting on to initiations. It's something that keeps coming on. New signings join a club and they are heavily involved with our teammates, getting them to do something to make them feel part of the group. We see examples of it all the time. There's been some really memorable ones. Guys, have you been involved in initiations? And if so, what did you have to do, and who made you do them?
Similar to what Chris said, I used to do impressions of Willie McStay, who was our youth team manager. And we went away for America with the first team, and Lenny found out that I'd done that as well. So every day, not just the first day, every day I had to get up and do a Willie McStay impression. Used to crack Lenny up, but Chad Urie, he done the weirdest thing ever, man. After that, I just thought, you are a weird guy. He stood up, done a big smile, and then just started talking all the rubbish, man. Swinging his arms about. But then Andy Hinkle, who was the most boring guy ever, man, got up and he's like, "Okay, guys, I'm going to tell a joke."
Welsh?
No, one guy. Mad German.
Welsh, Andy Hinkle.
He said two guys got lost in sea. And a German coast guard radios over and says, where are you? Or something like that. And he says, we are sinking. And the coast guard says back, what is it you are sinking about? Easily the worst initiation. Went down like a shit sandwich. Worst initiation I've ever seen Andy Hinkle. So that's the two I remember.
Oh, dear. Brilliant. Always be a
deadpan face, man.
A daft joke, I always thought it's my favourite joke of all time. I'll tell it very quickly. The old Dougie Bailey, the Sunday Post, Lex Bailey's. Uh-huh. Dad, the World Cup in France, 98 with Scotland, we'd all go out for dinner every night, the guys for the Sunday newspapers, and we'd just be walking down the street and big Dougie Bailey, be well in his 60s at that time, loved our fives, what done, puffing away. They'd turn on the boys and just let them go like that. Two lions walking down Sucky Hall Street. One turns to the other and says, "Toon's quiet tonight."
Because they're lions again.
Lions, so what do you do? And people say, "I don't get it." Say, "What do you do if you see a lion? You run, don't you?" You know? Like, oh, just daft job, but it was fair. It was a way Dougie told him. That was murder. At least Zion. Initiations, Chris, what about yourself?
Initiations, yeah. So I was in the Hilton in Glasgow. I had to tell a joke or sing a song, so I told a very, very crap joke and got
worse
away with
than
that.
You two?
Huh?
Was it worse than you two?
Yeah, oh, I don't know. It's a bit controversial.
All right, okay.
We'll leave
so
it.
No, but jokes. But I was lucky enough because every single initiation then after that, Charlie Mulgrew would sneak round because he's on a chair like this. Charlie would scant him. So not only is that embarrassed in front of everyone trying to tell a joke or sing a song, that you probably got exposed as well in front of all your new teammates.
Yeah.
So I actually got away with murder. Of not only did I tell a crap joke and just. Every just got bin to the side. I went.
Never got scanned.
So, yeah.
It sounds to you that the telling a joke's an easy way out compared to singing a song.
Boys get proper nervous about singing, don't they?
Singing, yeah. I'm a bit nervous about singing because I don't know many songs and lyrics. But initially, it's all about just making an absolute fool of yourself.
Yeah.
That's all they want you to do.
Yeah.
So if you do that, they're happy days. You know, that's what you see nowadays. But the good one, Carl Emery.
Oh, brilliant.
Go up there with his guitar, plays No Woman, No Cry, sings. And it takes everyone back. She's like, actually, I'm enjoying this. Carry on. Yeah. But, you know, you want him to... Yeah, you want someone to make a fool of themselves. Give him something memorable to talk about.
Uh-huh. Best chanters then in terms of... In dressing rooms, it was initiations. I thought it was the best boys.
Have you seen Shane Long singing? No. He's brilliant as well. Shane Long on the guitar. Best stuff.
Did you see Daryl Murphy? He was meant to be good.
Daryl Murphy, no, I've never seen
Westlife,
him.
I think he can.
Yeah, I did, yeah.
I think he can.
Stevie Thompson gets a guitar out as well, doesn't he?
Really?
Stevie used to be
well,
at Rangers.
Well, Stevie did at Rangers, and he sang when they got promoted, didn't he? Jim O'Brien's brilliant, by the way. Jim O'Brien, that's funny. Brilliant, excellent. Annoying, but good.
What, annoyingly good or just annoying?
Annoyingly good. No, Jim, he's great on the guitar and good singer as well.
And the what, who's guys that have just, you've actually thought you've been cringing behind the couch? Watching them,
Charlie Austin was terrible.
Was
went, oh my god, like, so basic. He sang Wonderwall and just talked his, nothing about him.
I think really Gary Hooper's was awful. I wasn't there, obviously. Hoops came a little early, but that was please. It can't be as bad as Hoops, it can't be as bad as Hoops. Now, Hoops is one of the most nervous guys ever.
Is he?
You know, getting a conversation out of him is almost impossible. He was like, oh, I don't know. Come on, like they were saying, come on, dude, geez, just get up there, just do something. Not doing it. He went, find me what you want. So Neil Lennon's like, right, okay, that's 500 quid, it's a grand, it's 2 grand. Right, we're going to do your week's wages in a minute if you're not getting up. Neil, I'm not bothered. They actually sat round the dinner table for 2 hours. And he went, we're not going in, like, bearing in mind, there's games the next day. And he got up there and he told some, I don't even know how it went, but some silly joke. And the punchline was something like, because they are. You know what I mean? Like some stupid farmer's joke. Like, and that was it. And bright red, nearly, you know, burst into tears. Can't cope with this pressure.
It's mad, that, isn't it? You can play in front of all the people.
Oh, just trying to get a conversation. Yeah. Morning, mate. What's happening? What's up?
From going right back to when he's first started in a.
Oh, no, it wasn't farmers.
Game.
It was Pirates.
Pirates.
Yeah. That's it.
Has it always been the case, initiation stuff? Is this something that's just come in the past 5-10 years? Has it been going back to when he's first started 20 odd years ago?
Yeah, always. I think being a youth team player coming through to the first team, that was it. You know, oh. But I think Aberdeen still do that. I've seen some good little videos on social media of them.
At Christmas time,
yeah,
you have to get
the money, yeah. Because back in the day, obviously, getting £45 a week.
Yeah.
You clean boots all week to get your Christmas money. Probably get a couple hundred quid in an envelope, which would mint, but you had to do something for it, and usually in your underpants running around a freezing pitch somewhere. But no, I think it builds character, it's good fun. And yeah, I think it breaks the ice, doesn't it?
We at Dundee, we used to get the young boys to come in every Monday. but going and pick one and need to tell us a story for the weekend. You can imagine what story we're talking about, but you could just tell the wee guy's sitting lying through his to impress the boys, but it was always funny, man. Always funny.
Brilliant. Listen, really enjoyed it this morning. Thank you very much to Chris Commons for joining us, Chris.
No, Joel, thank you very much.
Your company too. Simon, once again.
Cheers, mate.
Looking great. Good luck tonight, Peterhead. Looks like travelling up north, home to Clyde tonight.
Home to Clyde tonight. Big game. We could go top of the league tonight.
Brilliant.
Fingers crossed.
Wish you well. Well, listen, thanks for listening to the Open Goal podcast, keeping the ball on the ground in association with our friends at William Hill and Matt Guidi. Thank you very much, and hope that you join us next week. Goodbye.